Transmitting to you from Old Heart Radio.
Prepare to have your bones chilled and your hairs raised. It's the Whack Arnold's Brothers Podcast.
Welcome home.
Oh, corn dogs, hot dogs, all dogs alike. Guess what it is? It's another Whack Arnold Brothers podcast.
Yes, sir.
Buddy, episode 106.
Pick up sticks. Dude. Yeah.
I honestly really always loved pick up sticks as a game. You know, like it was always a good time. Although, you know, I can get kind of competitive about it, I feel like.
Well, yeah, I don't care what it is. If it's rock, paper, scissors, I'm competitive with it. So, yeah. I honestly, man, I don't pick up sticks. It's been so long since I've...
Since what was that? Played. Yeah, it's been a what minute was that? For me.
What was that game called that... Fuck, never mind. I'm not even going to be able to describe it, but sticks were involved in the game. I think marbles were too, and you had to like...
Oh, it was...
Pull...
You had to like take things out and like drop the marbles. What the fuck was it? Like Spelunk or something like that?
Yeah,
you
know? I think that's what it was. I think that's what it was called. So now I need to look it up.
Yeah, dude. I do remember that. I don't know if I ever actually played that game, though. Like, I always saw it and was like... That looks crazy fun because, you know, it involved all the sticks and the marbles and the tube that held them all or whatever the fuck it was. But, yeah, good old games. I mean,
Kerplunk,
you know,
Kerplunk.
Spurlunk.
Close.
Yeah, I got the lunk.
Yeah, Kerplunk.
Yeah. Dude, they just don't make board games like they used to. You know?
Oh, for sure.
Nobody's ever made another mouse trap.
Ooh-wee. yeah.
Yeah, dude. For a while, I even remember carrying around a bundle of pickup sticks to play, although very few people ever wanted to just, like, drop what they were doing and throw down on
play
a quick game
sticks.
Of pickup sticks.
That's
Yo,
awesome.
Guys, I got my sticks. Nah, you're way cooler if you had Pogs, that's for sure.
Yeah, speaking of Pogs, did you get those like DC Pogs you were talking about?
Dude, yeah, me and Hannah have been opening. There's still a lot to open, and we've opened like a bunch. And they're fucking rad, dude. Like they're straight up like some of them look like, you know, they literally just like copied art, like comic book artists renderings of these characters from different, like, you know, pieces, and like there's some really cool ones. You know, I think it must have come out right around the Death of Superman storyline, because there's a lot of like those, like there's Superboy, Cyborg, Superman, Steel, the Eradicator, you know.
Yeah.
And there's like Doomsday, and Doomsday like looks like he's like, you know, half in his containment suit still and shit.
Okay.
There's like, I think my favorite one we've gotten one Peacemaker, which I thought I was so surprised by, because, you know, like Peacemaker is like a
super
fairly popular
character
now, but back then it was like, who the fuck is Peacemaker? Like,
for real, he was like super obscure. So that's awesome.
Yeah, dude, it was like so random. Yeah, there's some cool ones. Definitely some cool ones. Some like also like really like strange side characters that like, you know, I don't fully recognize.
Okay.
I'm waiting to fill out the rest of the Bat family. I have like, we have like Batman, Robin, a couple Nightwings. And I'm wondering if there will be like a Batgirl that pops up, but maybe not, because Batgirl wasn't really like super prominent then.
Is there like a checklist of all the ones in the set?
Yeah, each pack has like either a checklist of like the set, or it has like POG gaming instructions. So
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking rad. And I have put them like the ones we have. I've like put in like numbered order because they're all numbered too. So it's like it's pretty satisfying to like look at them all out and be like, yeah, dude, now we're just missing like 32. You know?
they're pretty
awesome. No slammers yet though. Well, actually, there was like one random thing that was supposed to be a slammer, but it's basically just like a slightly thicker cardboard disc.
Damn.
Yeah, I was like, this can't possibly be what they mean by a slammer.
A slider, yeah.
Nah, dude, like there's like barely any weight to that sucker. Ain't nobody flipping fucking pogs with that. But yeah, dude, living that 90s dream.
That's cool. Yeah.
Okay, but today's episode, we do have a movie to talk about. We're not just talking about pogs. Right. Pogs are great, but episode 106, we decided to, you know, kind of take a little journey out into the snow. It's starting to get cold out. I think it's a late, it's either, oh, it's, I think it's listed as a 1993
release? came out on VHS July of 1993.
We got it's a fairly interesting movie. We got Chill Factor.
Yeah. Great name. Great box art.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's immediately what sucked me in when looking. You know, it's just like that. The cover is fucking fantastic. The icicle through the helmet.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of it's, you know, one of your, I wouldn't say standard, but it's definitely like, you know, that kind of trap. You know, teens trapped in a location plot line.
Totally.
Where, you know, evil ensues.
Yeah, I was expecting more of like a straight up traditional slasher, and you know, it wasn't that, you know. You know, it's definitely it had its moments.
Well, and it's like, it's kind of like strange overall, like, you know, it bookends with this like narration and sprinkles it in throughout, but like, you know, it's kind of like a strange dynamic, like almost like an unnecessary dynamic, because you don't really follow it up with much. Like,
true,
you know, but
you can also tell that it's like the production value isn't that great. Some of the lines that are delivered are pretty bad. So like, definitely a lower budget affair.
Definitely,
but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad or good either way, but you can just tell at times that it's definitely a lower
budget. There's like a couple of really strange cuts that happen in the movie. Like you can tell like at times like somebody's like saying some dialogue and then they cut really quick to like something else, and it's like it happens in the bar. And you're just sort of like, did they just like severely edit out like a piece, right? I feel like I missed a step.
You know, it's... Yeah, it also has a bunch of no-name actors. Same with the director. It looks like this is his only director credit. He was a producer. Christopher Webster. He was a producer on Hellraiser, Hellraiser 2, Heathers, and some other stuff, but I'm pretty sure this is his only directing credit, and none of the actors had an IMDb page except for the voiceover actress, so not a lot of star power.
No. I mean, but that being said, it is a horror movie that involves snowmobiling, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah. There's a rad snowmobile race. So.
Oh my god, dude. And there's quite a bit of it. Like, so like, you know, even at the very get-go, you know, it you have like, we were talking about like that kind of like narration while like you see these like people snowmobiling around sort of like a misty dark night. you know, and the narration's all ominous, right? It's like, back then, it's like talking about I had this nightmare or whatever, and, you know, back then I didn't know that it was gonna come true, and one point they say the classic the first chapter of my life ended, childhood ended. After, you know? it was so corny, bro.
It would just be the beginning of something far worse.
Yeah.
It also has while there's some narrations, there's some really slowed down shots of this couple. You know,
so in love with Tom.
It almost reminded me of some of those really weird. It's been a while since we've mentioned this.
I know where you go,
but it sort of reminded me of some of the shots in Sledgehammer, where it was like,
I couldn't tell. It definitely gave me Sledgehammer vibes, because it was slowed down, but it just really did not work.
Another thing that perplexed me is that, you know, this came out in 93, so it's probably filmed in 92. But when she's doing the narration, she talks about how the year 2000 was just around the corner. So this movie takes place in 1999. You're like, what?
Bro, this is a future movie.
Yeah. That's crazy. Just baffled by that. I was like, what?
There's nothing about this movie that looks close to the year 2000. That's fucking funny.
No, it looks like a late 80s.
For real, though. I was just like, I thought this was like square in the 80s when I first watched it, you know. So, you know, it opens up with that. You kind of get these, you know, quick shots of really the two. Yeah, I mean, they're all kind of they all almost have equal screen time for the most part. But Jeannie and Tom are the couple that are in love, and she can't understand how such a handsome college boy can love her. but then it kind of segues into the first epic snowmobile excursion. Mm-hmm. You know, just some good friends blading around on this. You know, just carving it up. I think even the narrator, Jeannie, at one point mentions that she could ride better than most of them.
Yeah. I could drive a sled better than any of them, she says.
Yeah, bro. I was like, so, wow. Yeah.
So we've got Tom, his fiance Jeannie, who is the one that has the voiceovers, her younger sister, Karen, and her boyfriend, Chris, as well as another couple, Ron and Lisa. So this movie actually had doesn't have a lot of characters. It's basically these six characters, bartender for less than a minute, and then some patrons in a bar, but literally it's basically just these six characters. So there's not a lot of having to keep up with okay, who's this, that, you know, which can be nice at times. But yeah, so it's this group of friends, three couples, which is a kind of a horror cliche. But yeah, we're in Wisconsin, and we learn here shortly that they're out there celebrating Chris's birthday, I think it is.
Always the snowmobile birthday celebration is always a good idea. And so they're cruising around in the snow, and they eventually pull up to this just random bar middle of fucking nowhere.
It's a good question.
I was so perplexed by that. I was like, totally. What? And the bar is it has some less than ideal kinds of patrons.
That's one way to put it.
They all roll in, and you know, everybody starts giving them looks, because they're like, oh, look at these, young rich folk.
Townsfolk. Yeah.
And then one of them, you know, is just straight up like just a racist.
Yeah, because Lisa's, they're all white, but Lisa's the black female black character. So just important to mention that.
And she accidentally bumps into this patron, and he spills his beer, and then kind of has a confrontation with her, you know, where he he, you know, drops the N-word at one point during this whole like ordeal.
Jesus and, Christ.
You know, and she's like, what are you afraid of, a black pussycat like me?
Yeah, she's on sass.
Yeah. But yeah. Luckily, she's also dating a big old beefcake, Ron.
Yeah.
Who, like you learn in this random, like bit of dialogue that he's been drafted by the Vikings.
Yeah. Someone's like, yeah, he's on the Vikings practice squad or something like that. And you're like, wow, that is so like, random.
He's like, I got called down to camp.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
Fucking funny. But, you know, the racist bar patron tries to take a swing at him and like fucking Goku Ron just like, just catches the punch and just like dissolves the situation with his, you know, innate strength. Although, like, I was kind of confused. Like, I think it's not, was it Tom or is somebody else? They're like one of the friends in the group, like, also kind of like, I think it must have been Tom. It like sort of like is on the side, and there's this like weird moment where like he
stops a stabbing.
That's what it was. So like, the dude was gonna go like his racist buddy. Bartender, his buddy was gonna stab Ron or something, and Tom like shoves his hand against the pocket, and like the dude, like the bartender or the bar guy's friend, like he like pulls out his hand and it's all bloody, and it'll almost look like it's one of his fingers had gotten severed or something.
Yeah,
you're just like, what the fuck?
Because Ron clocks the drunk guy.
That's right.
And then Tom's like Spider-Man reflexes before the guy can even get the knife out of his pocket, like stops it, causing the guy to stab himself or cut his finger off. Yeah, it just happened super, super quick. And, you know, the next thing we know, these two guys are getting kicked out, right? And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Are getting kicked out of the bar. This is where we get introduced to Bessie, the bartender and probably the worst actress in the movie, who, you know, I'm glad you got rid of them, you know, and
thanks for saving us the trouble.
Yeah. And she is so thankful that she gives them a pitcher of beer on the house.
Wow. Yeah, there it is.
never had that happen in all my life. Never had a. Here's a free pitcher of beer for you.
I never had that happen either. I think the closest we came was like one time we were playing a show in Coeur d'Alene and and like the place we were playing at, we were so stoked because we could, it was in Idaho, right? So we could smoke inside still.
And, oh, wow.
And the bartender was only charging us $1 for each pitcher because we were performing.
Jeez,
and so we were getting pitchers of Pabst for $1. It was crazed. But yeah, wow. Anyway, never had the pitcher on the house. So yeah, she seems really, you know, really thankful for them. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, you know, go around and introduce themselves to her.
Yeah, it was very convenient. You know, we get to learn all these characters' names, and this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so. And yeah, it was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because a lot of times it doesn't happen. There's a lot of times where you're like waiting like 30 minutes in to learn a character's name, or you learn a character's name through a subtitle. So it was kind of nice that we are able to quickly learn all these people's names, but it seemed like such a convenient plot device for that to happen.
Exactly. So as they're like, you know, kind of gobbling up their, you know, their food, drinking their beer, you know, at some point, Tom and
Chris,
they'd start talking about like who can Jesus. You know, drive the snowmobiles faster, and Jeannie has this like, you know, a brief flash moment of like her nightmare that you kind of see a little bit of in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
and so you're like, okay, like she's they got have premonitions, this, dog.
Yeah, they have this, you know, macho argument over who's the fastest, and I one of them even mentions like some something he did to his sled or some spec he has for his sled that makes it faster.
Yeah, I can go like 100 miles an hour now.
Yeah, bro. And Bessie overhears them and comes over and you know, mentions that she knows this spot that's about 30 miles out of town, and that she'll give them a map. Which she does, and she also tells, I think it's Karen, that no one lives out there, so if the weather gets bad, you know, turn around, and tells them that the name of the place they're going to is Black Friar Lake. She also says that the name is based on a local history, and it's quite the story, but you'll have to wait until next time for me to tell you that story. So you're kind of like, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, okay. Bessie's also rocking a hat, by the way, that says, I make shit happen. So, you know, she's definitely got it going.
Maybe also, she owns the bar, you know, maybe she owns the bar too.
So, like, there is that weird moment while they're talking, you know, where, like, Karen and Bessie are talking, where Tom, like, goes up behind Karen.
Yeah.
And sort of like starts like trying, you know, kind of like
caressing her,
caressing her ass. Yeah. All while Jeannie's watching and Ron's watching. Chris is watching.
Yeah, it is kind of weird, huh?
It's so strange. You're just like, what is it like?
Because they're brother and sister, so it's super weird. Yeah,
bro. That's what I was thinking. I was like, this is cringy. Like, I don't know. It was just bizarre.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't follow up on that in any way, shape, or form, but it was kind of off-putting, to say the least.
It was so strange. They get, you know, they finish their meal, and Bessie gives them a map, and then that's when they decide to roll out, you know, to Black Friar Lake. And you don't like them. You just kind of follow them there for a little bit, I believe, right? Or is it just like just the next thing you know, they're at the lake?
Yeah,
can't remember?
Yeah, and it seems like the snow is kind of coming. Basically, yeah, because we get it like another quick voiceover about how she wished they could have stopped it right there, but Karen badly wanted to see the race. It looks like the snow's kind of coming down pretty heavy. But next thing we know, this race is about to start. Ron talks about how he's going to go about, you know, so far ahead, about a mile or so he can be the finish line. Lisa, you know, drives her sled up, stands on it with her orange beanie to kind of be the flag, and next thing you know, whoosh, these two were off.
Dude, on their, fast and furious, man. But yeah, dude, you're right. Like, just they just, you know, they start bolting, like you said,
Michael Bolton. Yeah,
Michael Bolton. And it's a furious race, man. They're going hard. Okay, you know who, for a brief moment, you just can't even tell who's gonna really win. You know,
yeah, they're neck and neck there for a little while.
Yeah, they're necking, dude. They're. But, you know, it all kind of like goes out of control as first Chris kind of like they cross the finish line, and first Chris kind of tumbles a little bit off of his. Mm-hmm. And then Tom just goes fucking flying off of his snowmobile and just straight into a fucking tree. Like, he fucks himself up. And, you know, there's this kind of moment right off of that where like the friends are like running up to his body, and there's like this like shaky camera thing kind of happening, you know, as like I mean obviously they really couldn't help it in a way, probably because the camera operator's trudging through the snow at this point. But you know, but it kind of gives us like almost, you know, POV style like moment where they run up, and of course Chris, you know, being who was established as being a medical student,
that's right, yeah,
you know, assesses the situation and tells everybody that Tom's in shock and we gotta, you know, get him somewhere out of this weather. Mm-hmm. And so that leads them,
because it was like a pretty gnarly
dude, it was
crash, because he like pretty much flies in like head first. So, yeah. You know, Chris talks about how there's probably nerve damage. He's got a concussion, but you see that the visor on his helmet has completely fucking shattered and his face is covered in blood. So like, you know, this is not, this isn't, and they're, you know, basically 30 miles away from anybody. So this is a pretty dire situation that they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and they're talking about how it's like 0 degrees and it's going to get like minus 20, you
Jeez.
Know, and shit. And so, yeah, they're basically like scrambling. Somebody, I can't remember, like, you know, they talk about how there's no buildings for like, you know, anywhere around, but it's like wrong. I don't even know how they know it's there, but Ron eventually, like, I think is the first one to roll up on this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Ron and Karen decide to go see if they can find anything nearby.
Yeah.
And by chance, they just, you know, very quickly happened upon this, like, rundown looking lodge. It's very convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like, they roll up and there's like a, like you can tell, you can see a, like a crucifix on the like at top of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Ron like drops Karen off, you know, and circles around to see if you can find any way of getting in.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it's like a, definitely like a rundown place. Like basically, it's all boarded up. Like,
yeah.
You know, one point Ron basically is seen just like ripping the board, you know. He's been drafted by the Vikings, so
he's macho. Yeah,
he just starts pulling the boards off with his with his bare hands because he's a man. Damn it.
Because he tells Karen to go back and, you know, get the rest. You know, I'll find a way in. And he just literally just starts fucking ripping these boards, boards that have been nailed up on the door, and just starts ripping them off to find a way in. And before he makes his way in, you get like a quick shot of the inside, and obviously you see more of it once he does get inside, but it appears that there's an abundance of religious paraphernalia around this place. Yeah. It's kind of a very unsettling setting
for sure. This like random I don't know, religious shack out in the middle of nowhere.
Which we learn, like, you know, more about in a little bit, but at first you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, for real though. Like, especially because, you know, like you said, like when he's like, you know, when he sees the inside and Ron's kind of looking around once he gets in there, it's, you know, lots of like crosses and statues and like, you know, some of those like types of like statues where it's like, you know, Jesus is bleeding out of his side, kind of thing.
He's on the cross,
you
know? Yeah.
You're just like, what the fuck? Yeah, you know, and everything obviously is like full of cobwebs and shit. Like, yeah, there's just nothing inviting about the place, we'll say.
Yeah, it looks like it hasn't been inhabited in a long time.
Yeah.
He tries a light switch to no avail. So, you know, it seems like they found a place to be in, but with no electricity, you know, probably no running water, you know,
yeah,
it's obviously better than being with nothing, but it's still not this, you know, great situation to be in.
Oh yeah. Better than being outside, but
totally.
Not by too much. They eventually, you know, everybody else eventually rolls up and, you know, they like all help kind of like drag Tom's body and they find like a little like bench thing to put him on. And he does, man. He looks fucked up. Like his face is all bloodied, you know.
He's worse for wear. Yeah.
Definitely.
They also, you know, at one point, pull his gloves off, and on one of his hands is like this fucking, it was some good effects, this gnarly fucking gash and bones are exposed, so you're like, shit, you know.
Yeah, dude, it was like a really good like bit of effects there for a second, you mm-hmm. know. It's quick, but yeah, the bones protruding out of the hand, that was like, ooh. Yeah, and yeah, so like, you know, as they like have him laying on the table, Chris is like assessing the situation. Everybody's kind of like arguing about what to do. Genie's, right. You know, makes the observation like it's starting to get dark. So, you know,
we got to figure something out.
Yeah. And, you know, like, yeah, like you said earlier, I think, you know, he has a like they think he has a concussion amongst other things, as well as like probably some internal injuries.
Totally.
And, you know, priority now shifts to like getting it warm in there, like lighting a fire.
Yeah, because their initial plan is to keep him warm presumably until morning, until they can medevac him out of there. So, you know, that's what they do. The next thing you know, you see the group start a fire. They're carrying stacks of wood. You know, Lisa is wondering what this place is. Ron suggests that it was a religious summer camp for kids. And, you know, this is where they take the glove off. Genie starts cleaning the blood off of his face. Like you mentioned, Chris talks about concussion, possible nerve damage, et cetera, et cetera. Lisa offers up her shirt because it's cotton, so they can wrap the wound on his hand. And Chris also suggests that he's lost a lot of blood and will need a transfusion by morning.
Yeesh.
So that's a lot to take in.
Yeah, and also I loved at one point Lisa and Ron are talking about like all the religious stuff in there, and Lisa has this line where she's like, I was raised Baptist and this is a little strong for me, and then Ron goes, well, that's a little strong too. Yeah, I was Catholic.
I was Catholic. Yeah.
it was just like kind of stupid.
It doesn't matter what denomination you are, death doesn't care. So
yeah. It comes for us all.
Oh, then we get one of my favorite lines of the movie here. So Macho Ron, real quick, Karen tells the group that she couldn't find a phone, obviously, and guesses that no one has been there for 20 years, which is probably, you know, she's probably in the ballpark of that. But yeah. Ron starts suiting up and talks about how he's going to go take a snowmobile, go back to the tavern, find a phone, call for help. And, you know, Lisa's obviously pleading for him to stay and talks about how he might get lost. And he goes, football players don't get lost. They know where the end zone is.
God damn it, dude. That's so fucking bad, bro. Like, shut up, Ron, you fucking meathead. Like, nobody cares. Football players know where the end zone is.
Oh man, God. I was in tears, dude. It's too good. Jesus Christ.
Wow, way to make this about you, Ron.
yeah, you know, just had to make another mention of that football career of his, you know.
In case nobody remembered.
I'm a
star, baby. So like you said, you know, Ron's gearing up to go. Again, there's nothing in the house, you know. It's also I keep finding it funny. I know Lisa gave up her shirt, you know, to like help bandage what they could, but it's funny to me how she's just like running around in this like just spandex top.
Oh yeah,
now. I was like, she's gonna be fucking freezing, man. Everybody else is still like in sweaters and shit,
like a coat. Yeah, no, she'd be cold. Like you mentioned, you know, there doesn't seem to be much. Karen, you know, goes through some cabinets. There seems to be a lot of like kitchen, you know. She opens a shelf and there's a bunch of cups. She opens another shelf, there's like a bunch of salt and pepper shakers. But she also like looks up on top of the cabinet and there's a box labeled first aid. That falls over. She seems to grab a blanket from it. and, you know, bring it over so they can cover Tom with that as well. While this is all happening, you know, we get a quick shot of Ron cruising on the sled. And this is where the group, you see Jeannie. Jeannie tells Chris that she felt Tom's finger move. And, you know, they have this kind of nice little scene where Jeannie gets him to squeeze her hand, and Lisa gets him to wiggle his toes. So showing some signs of life here.
Yeah. Which, yeah, like, yeah, at this point, you're just like, okay, maybe he's going to survive. Maybe this is, maybe this is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also kept thinking, like, especially if they think he's, like, got a concussion, like, I would really be trying hard to keep him up, you know?
Right, absolutely.
Like, you know, but also, it's like, what can you do? Like, I kept thinking about that, like, you're that fucked up, right? Like, it would be so painful probably to be awake that it'd probably make you pass out.
Which is basically what happens in this next scene. You know, he opens his eyes, gains consciousness, but he's obviously very weak. He talks about how his head hurts, sputters another kind of corny line, and then seems to go right back, you know, to sleep. So,
Yeah, he makes a joke. No aspirin.
I won the race but lost the war.
Yeah, that's right. Fucking goon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, they're kind of keeping eyes on the time as you have these like cut shots of Ron snowmobiling and through the night. You know.
Yep.
And like, you know, it's after 9. Ron should be getting close. And
yep.
You know, as it kind of keeps going on, you know, it does kind of just keep getting like later. Like next thing you know, they're checking the watch and it's like, it's after 10.
It's after 10. Yeah.
Sure. He's there. And this is when Karen, they're all sitting around the table looking all sleepy. Karen's like, I found this box of stuff. Why don't we take a look at it? And she just starts like pulling out all this random stuff from, you know, that she's found, including like photos of like the campers. I love at one point they I can't remember what leads to this conclusion, but it's like the camp is called Camp Saint Dominic, and there's like a photo of some kids holding a banner and shit, and there's like a motto on there that says keep the beast in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow during all of this they conclude that this camp must have been owned by Dominicans.
That was
so random, dude. I was like, what
a conclusion. Yeah, Karen jumps to the conclusion that the lake is named due to the Dominicans and that they owned it. Yeah, I was like, what?
Okay.
So random.
Yeah, so, you know, they sort of establish that they think it's, you know, an old like Bible camp or something.
Yeah, you know. We also get a weird conversation where Karen says how she wishes they had a deck of cards so they could play blackjack, and Jeannie goes into this little speech about how her mom used to tell fortunes, that there are bad fortunes along with good ones, obviously, but it's super random. And the next thing you know, we finally get, you know, obviously the first inciting event of this movie was the snowmobile crash out in the middle of nowhere. But now we get the thing that really kickstarts this movie when Karen pulls out, this like circular wheat looking Ouija board, but instead of a traditional planchette, it has a spinner, and Lisa seems to recognize it, and that her grandmother, who was from Haiti, had a similar board called the Devil's Eye.
Yeah, and it was like 300 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Yeah, she tells a story about her grandmas and her cronies, as she put it. and how they would talk to their dead husbands using the devil's eye. Yeah. But she never really like fully believed it because they always seemed like they were drinking a lot while doing it or something.
Which
is kind of, I mean, the board's kind of a cool like piece.
Totally.
You know,
totally.
It has like a spinning like arrow and lettering all around the side with like a couple of different words, and like the centerpiece with that holds the arrow in place looks like an eyeball. Like,
yeah, it's like, pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I was like, "This is dope."
I actually really enjoyed that because, you know, how many movies are there where someone pulls out just like a traditional Ouija board? So it was cool to have something that was a little different, a little more unique. I did enjoy that. And, you know, even though Jeannie seems freaked out and hesitant, she's the one that proceeds to tell the group how to fucking operate the thing.
Yeah, dude, that's what I was thinking. I was like, if you're so worried about it, just like, don't fucking tell them, man. It's just crazy. Yeah, she's like, it can be dangerous.
Yeah, you got to put your fingers on it.
Like, if you know that, dude, then just fucking don't.
Yeah. You know, you gotta, everyone has to believe and they gotta conjure a spirit. Yeah, why would you? Oh my gosh. And sure as shit, next thing you know, here they are using the board.
Yeah.
And before you know it, the spinner starts moving and rotating around. We get another quick shot, of Ron cruising through the woods. The storm seems to have gotten even worse at this point.
Yeah.
And then things start to take a turn for the worse.
Yeah, right. Like, so, you know, like you said, like there's like a shot. I think it's like Ron's like snowmobile's overheating or something while they're performing all of this. So it's like almost like you can tell like something's like not gonna go right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these like, is this where? No, I think it's coming up where Tom, like, you have some Tom activity, but
yes,
it's like, yeah, it's like all spinning and they're obviously something is happening. You know, like a wind kicks up in the fucking shelter, for instance. Like,
right.
You know, and Tom, this is where Tom starts having a seizure.
Yeah, he just starts convulsing.
Yeah, bro. And like, while all this is going down, you have these shots of Ron going on his snowmobile where you see this like line of barbed wire.
Oh, shit.
And then he keeps going towards it. And next thing you know, he's fucking clotheslined off of his snowmobile by the barbed wire. And again, this is all happening while Tom is having like this massive seizure where like Chris is trying to help him with.
Totally.
And the board's just spinning on its own, you know, like you immediately know this, like some fucking shit is going on. And like to the, you know, Jeannie gets blown over at one point with the wind gust, and she's like hysterical about like, I told you this isn't a toy. And again, like we were just laughing about it. It's like, then why the fuck did you tell them how to use it, man?
Exactly. Like, should have just taken that thing, thrown it outside, thrown it in the fire. I don't know.
Yeah. Use it for fucking kindling. I don't know, man, anything, but Tom's seizure stops and he like opens his eyes and seems a little more chatty all of a sudden.
Right.
Know.
So, as you mentioned, Ron drove throat first into some razor wire, slicing his neck, killing him. Tom definitely has a change in attitude. In the way he interacts, the way he speaks, and it's not a good change, because he comes out of it and talks about how he didn't have a seizure, but that he was just breaking out of the fever. Karim calls him a pain in the ass, and he has a really weird line where he says, "I'll give you a pain in the ass. Don't worry." What? Again, this is your sister.
Yeah.
Tom and Karen start to kiss. Tom says he needs some sleep. And this is where Tom tells Lisa that Ron is safe in the bar by now, probably with some hot country babe. So he's definitely kind of, for lack of a better term, acting like a complete douche.
Yeah, dude. There's like so many weird bits of dialogue. Like Chris and Karen are kind of like, you know, holding each other. And Tom says something about
Chris,
like,
excuse me, Chris and Karen kiss. Excuse me.
You know, he says something to the effect of like, you know, you guys need to find a dark little corner, don't
yeah.
you? And then Lisa jumps in with like this, like, quit it, guys. You're making me horny. Don't forget my man's out there in the snow.
Yeah.
It's like, of course, with all of this going on, it being a young adult, you know, a college age adult movie, of course they're all going to get horny at some point.
Right,
and that is exactly right. What this whole scene transitions into is like, yep, a scene of Chris and Karen bucking down.
Yep.
And I will say this, you know, Chris is a medical student. He probably knows the term for this, but he seems to have a bit of a premature sort of reaction to their buck down session. Okay.
I loved the sultry music that kicked in.
The passion was in the air, man.
Yeah.
And that air was stanky and thick. Okay. Like,
but yeah, they definitely, it's not a very long sex scene.
No.
So they finish and then they have like a little conversation. Chris, you know, talks about how he's never read or seen anything that was similar to the situation with Tom, and specifically mentions Tom coming out of it. And she tells him that all that matters, you know, is that he came out of it, and congratulates Chris on doing a good job.
Yeah. Which, I mean, yeah, he's...
That happens before they buck.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he you know, gets told he's doing a good job, and that probably puts him in the mood, you know. Yeah, I am a doctor. And you know, so after their buck session, they're like pat asleep on the bed or whatever it is, you know, and Lisa checks in, sees Jeannie kind of like sleeping slumped over like on Tom.
Yep.
And that's when she, you know, kind of does some like exploring of her own, you know. She grabs a lamp and a coat and starts kind of walking around the place.
Yeah, we forgot to mention earlier, and it's not very important, because there's only like two scenes in this room, but when Ron was initially exploring on his own, he came across a door to an office, and on the door it said Camp Commander. Like, yeah. I said, it's not super important, but Lisa being the only one awake, and she does eventually put a jacket on, or at least slings a jacket over her shoulder at this point, grabs a lantern, and she goes to look around. She goes into the office and looks through a desk, and kind of finds some weird stuff in here.
Oh, man, there's like all sorts of strange things in that room, like including like, she like, there's like random like stuffed ant, like snakes and shit like that, like taxidermied animals. But what does she pull out of the Oh, she pulls out like some letters out of the desk.
Yeah, one of the letters, because she like reads some of the letters, and in one of the letters, there's a character or a person referred to as Bessie. So I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder if this is the Bessie from the bar, or if that was just like a what's the word I'm looking for, or if that was a
it's like a coincidence of some
coincidence.
Sort.
You know, but she also finds an old newspaper. And what is the newspaper headline?
Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Satanic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Satanic cult at Camp Saint Dominic.
Whoa.
What happened here? She says. So yeah, you're like, oh, so. Like it was established earlier, this at one point was a religious summer camp for children. And then it turned into something a little more sinister, because you get that feel in some of the notes where it talks about, like, one of the first note is a letter to whoever owns the camp about how they're withdrawing their child from the camp. And then the second note talks about this incident that happened. So, yeah, you kind of get the feeling that this place definitely has some dark history.
Yeah. Also, I'm just like, you know, that Bessie connection. Now I'm thinking about it. I really do wonder. I was like, maybe Bessie is like the person referenced in that letter.
Totally. It has to be.
But yeah, so like, you know, spookiness ensues and Lisa kind of goes like tumbling down this hallway. And at one point, like, you see this like shadowy figure sort of like appearing behind her. Yeah. With these like clawed almost looking hands, and she passes by like a crucifix that's just spinning on the wall.
Yeah.
Which, you know, bad sign. She sneaks into the walk-in, and that's when like this crazy scene unfolds where, you know, lights start flickering and you see this like shadowed cloaked figure like waving its arm, and every time it waves its arm, cuts to Lisa in the walk-in, and like something else is getting knocked over, and the next thing you know, there's these like blades spinning in front of her, and the arm waves keep happening, and like the blades keep coming closer or something, and
yeah,
and then all of a sudden just
yeah,
just dices her up, you know, and just blood splatter on the walls, like,
yeah, that was a cool shot.
Yeah,
I love that in any horror movie, just a good heavy blood spray against the wall. It's satisfying.
Yeah, if you're gonna do it, you know.
Yeah, I thought it would have been cool if there would have maybe been like a decapitation scene, or at least a shot of like her neck getting sliced, but I understand that they probably didn't have the budget, you know, probably didn't have the super extensive like special effects budget, but it was still a very unsettling scene, because I enjoy the demonic shadow figure, you know, causing this to happen. And also while this is happening, you know, there's a flashback to Tom, and Tom sitting there with his eyes open smiling, so it's very sinister.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, you're really starting to connect these dots where it's like something's going on with Tom, like you know, like even like, and this whole time, like, again, Jeannie's also just like, you know, still sleeping on top of him, so she hasn't noticed him like awake or anything,
right?
Which, you know, I guess I don't know if I would have or not. He just opened his eyes, but you know, Chris ends up getting up out of bed and sort of checks on the scene, and you know, he sees that Tom seems to be, you know, sleeping still. Jeannie's sleeping still. Everything's as stable.
Seems
as it
to be
can
in order. Yeah.
And then he goes kind of walking around. You know, he's like looking for Lisa.
Yep.
And as he kind of keeps walking around, he almost starts. It's like he almost starts acting like he notices something. Maybe like watching him, or like, you know, there's like something going on, you know, he sees like a flashing red bulb at one point.
Not, like right above the pantry where she just got, you know, murdered. He sees this flashing red light, and as he gets closer, it stops. So that would be, you know, that would be kind of creepy, you know?
And then he opens the walk-in.
Aye, aye, aye.
And sees Lisa, you know, and all the blood and everything, and immediately, you know, right after, you know, he is like in horror, he closes it back up and just, you know, what the fuck. You see that shadowy figure again, kind of
totally
like drifting. Chris tries to like arm himself at this point. He grabs like a, I don't know, like some sort of kitchen knife. It's you know, and again, like, you know, you can almost get the vibe that like he senses something.
Totally. There. He's very clearly visibly shaken, you know.
And this leads him to like going outside. goes outside and he, like, you know, is all spooked and, you know, one thing leads to another. And an icicle, like, because this place is lit, like, covered in them, a giant icicle almost impales him, causes mm-hmm. him to fall over. Mm-hmm. And as he's, like, you know, looking straight up, another icicle drops, and this is like the money shot in the entire movie. The icicle drops and just goes straight through his eye socket, impaling him onto the ground in the last quiver of the hand, and then he's dead.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. Icicle eye trauma was not on my bingo card for this movie.
It was great, though.
Absolutely.
Know, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that scene. You always got to watch out for the icicles.
Totally. So yeah, you know, pretty quickly, you know, six has been whittled down to three. And again, you know, Jeannie's asleep. Karen's asleep. No one really knows that this is going on. They still think that Ron is out there somewhere trying to get help. They're not obviously aware of his fate. So things are starting to get worse here. And this continues when Karen now gets up and goes to talk to Jeannie. This is where Tom sort of gets rude with her again. Jeannie asks what time it is, and now... us as viewers learn that it's a little after 4 a.m. Tom then tells her that Chris went out back some time ago, went to go find Lisa, and then has another really fucking douche, like, unsettling line and says, you know, Chris, he likes a little dark meat now and again. Jesus Christ.
Angie. Yeah.
And this causes, you know, rightfully so, Karen calls him a real asshole and storms off. And then we get probably one of the most interesting sequences of the whole movie here. Because, you know, Tom seems to sit up totally fine, as if he didn't get involved in this, like, traumatic injury earlier. So much so where he asks her to take off the bandages on his hand and on his head, and his wounds have miraculously healed. You still see a scar on his hand, but his wounds have miraculously healed.
Yeah, like fucking Wolverine's healing factor. He's just good to go, you know.
And yeah, and Jeannie doesn't seem to be any bit concerned or question it. He tells her that he deserves a reward, and then they just start to kiss. And the next thing you know, he tells her that he arranged with Chris to allow some privacy. And the next thing you know, they go back, they get butt naked, and they buck down too. You're like, what the fuck?
I know. I was like, there's like
no way.
Like, in what fucking world would you just be like, wow, I'm so glad you're all better. Like, let's fuck.
No, I know. It is so baffling.
It was just crazy, man. It's absolutely crazy.
Like, if that was me, I would be super concerned. Like,
yeah.
You know, that just, you don't have a hand magically heal itself up. It's just, yeah, it's just still baffling to me that she doesn't even question it. Oh, man. Yeah, oh, dude. My goodness.
And so, you know, as they're getting, as they're, you know, revving it up and bucking down, you have these shots of, like, of Karen kind of, like, walking around through the place now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like anytime somebody goes wandering in this place, you know, it's a bad
not a good
now.
Idea. Yeah.
And as the passion is growing between Jeannie and Tom, dude, Tom starts getting, yeah.
He gives it to her good.
Oh, yeah, dude. He's all like, and he's all getting intense, like, you know?
Yeah. He's kind of a little animalistic almost.
Yeah, dude. It's some hard fucking. For a 1993 movie.
Yeah, more so than the previous sex scene. Like, this one seems a little bit more pleasurable for the female. Let's just put it that way.
And at one point, so Karen, you know, Karen's wandering around, and like we said, and like, you know, stumbles into like, I don't know, like a volleyball net or something, like, well, just dangling there.
Yeah, she's in a room that has like various sports equipment. There's like tennis rackets, roller blades, snowboard. So it's obviously some sort of, storage room for sporting equipment slash like pseudo gym. But yeah, there just seems to be this cut up, tattered volleyball net hanging there. And for some reason, I'm not sure. I wasn't really paying much attention. I'm not sure what she was trying to look at or what she was doing. But for some reason, she starts to stand up on a chair.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, again, what she was looking at. But it wasn't the best decision.
No.
'Cause next thing you know, the volleyball net seems to wrap itself around her neck. Lifting her up off the ground, suffocating her, ultimately snapping her neck and choking her to death.
Yeah, bro. It's crazy. And so, like, you know, you just have the shot of like her dangling feet as she's like very clearly now like dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this like, you know, moment where like you see Tom back with Jeannie. And he's like caressing her naked body, and his fingernails are all long now and gnarly.
Yeah, they're like vampire fingernails.
Yeah, bro. And then like you have this strange shot of like the walk-in door opening, and Lisa amongst like a bunch of mist and light is like, you know, kind of walks forward, and for some reason with like, you know, her eyes are all strange now, like demon eyes or something.
Yep.
She like takes her top off and then like looks like she's going to embrace.
There is no nudity.
No.
In this movie, which is surprising, but nice. But yeah, it is so weird.
And then it takes it even further, though. Like that happens. And then you have these like shots where basically like Tom like flips Jeannie over and like mounts her from behind.
Yeah.
And like you have another shot of Karen who just died, who like, you know, looks like all of a sudden like she's not in the net, and now she's like a sexy demon, like dead demon lady. Her hair's like all like kind of different, you know.
Yeah.
And weird Tom just like, you know.
He also, I'm also pretty sure that while he is giving it to Jeannie from the back, that there's like a brief moment where it looks like Karen, and then it switched back. It's so weird.
It's so, so strange. Weird. It like I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like I was just like, what is going on? And then it kind of fades out from that to like smoldering, you know, fire and you know, then kind of fades into the next day where it's all you know, all morning, and Jeannie gets up and nobody's there, and so she I loved it. She goes over to the window, you know, in just her like just her panties, and like, you know, takes in the morning for this a moment, seeing that nobody's around, and then like decides to get dressed and, you know, starts exploring around that, you know, and she goes to the table where the what was it called? What, the evil
the devil's eye?
Devil eye. Throw a D in
there. It's spinning.
Yeah, it's still spinning, dude. It's still spinning. Like, I can't tell you how many warning signs they just ignore in this fucking movie, dude. Like, and so it's still spinning. She just kind of puts some stuff down next to it and keeps walking around. Like, okay. And, you know, it definitely would, like, if everything feels off. Because, again, she's all of a sudden just completely alone in the place.
Yeah.
You know, she wanders through the kitchen, you know, and eventually stumbles upon the fucking walk-in freezer.
Because there's just like a pool of blood that is just seeping out from under the doorway.
Yeah, bro. She's like, yeah, and she, you know, does the classic thing, like crouches down, like dips her finger in it, like,
is that blood?
This is blood. Cracks open the fucking walk-in to see the carnage of what happened to Lisa.
Yes.
You know, and like obviously immediately freaks out. I kept thinking, like, dude, you just saw like a first dead body. Like, there's nobody else there. Like, I don't give a fuck. I would just go right outside and just fucking
get
leave.
The fuck out of there. Like, yeah.
You know, but she doesn't. Goes outside and sees Chris's body.
Frozen, you
know,
body.
Yeah, now frozen. You know, right outside there, which is still like, I do think that it's awesome that they had that kind of, like, you know, and not only was his death really cool, but the follow-up where it's like, now he's like, you know, been outside all night and his totally. Body's just stiff and completely totally. Frozen. Like, I don't know, it was just kind of a cool, like, a little extra. But yeah, she, you know, like, obviously freaks out even more, but goes back inside and goes up to the table.
Like, yeah, like you said, instead of getting the fuck out of there, she decides to go inside and consult the board.
Yeah. Oh yeah, let's go consult the devil's eye.
This scene was actually kind of cool though, because she sits there and, you know, asks the board a series of questions, which the board answers every single one. So she goes up to the board, asks if someone is there. It answers yes. She asks who it is. It says a friend. She asks who killed her friends. It spells out Tom. She asks why. It points to evil. She asks if it is really Tom. The board answers no. She asks what he is. It goes to enemy. She asks what she should do. And that's when it starts spinning fast. And then she finally deduces that she needs to get away.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty cool scene. Yeah. The dialogue in this scene is pretty bad. He's evil. Yeah, he's my enemy. Oh my God. So now she finally decides to leave, and she makes her way outside, and as she's making her way outside, she comes across like a window and peers inside to see Tom sitting in the office in the chair. Now he is in this black cloak, and he's, you know, he's spun around from her, but he is sitting in the chair in the office calling out all these different children's names. And he's almost like alerted to her presence because he spins around and his face looks like even more demonic at this point. Not like demon, like it's got
just like heavy shadows under his eyes and stuff like that. And his hands, dude, they show his hands, and his fingernails are now like fucking like 2 inches long at least, you know, like he's got demon hands real bad.
he's starting to undergo that transformation, and, you know, he gives her a very, very creepy smile. So she runs off to get on a snowmobile. You know, Tom runs outside, gets his hand on her shoulder, but she's able to make her escape and speed off on a snowmobile.
Yeah, I mean, lucky for her, she can ride better than all of them. So, you know,
also lucky for her that whoever's sled that was from before decided to leave the keys in it. That was pretty lucky too.
Yeah, very lucky. Although you do have the classic like cliche moment where it's like hard to start it at first.
Oh my God! Yeah, and you're of course.
Like, oh, of course.
Yeah, it's like trouble starting it, and then right as the person approaches, you know, it kicks on and you're able to. But then we get another like super weird scene. So she drives off for a while and she comes across the scene of the accident where Tom smashed into the tree, and there's a snowmobile that is standing upright in the snow, and next thing you know, she looks over and not Demon Tom, not Tom in the cloak. You get Tom looking as if he literally just got up from the accident in the same suit he was wearing when the accident happened, wearing the same helmet with the broken visor, with the same bloody face, like rises to his feet and looks at her before, you know, prying the snowmobile loose and getting on it to chase her, I was just like, what the fuck?
Bro, yeah, I was like, what is happening right now? Like,
yeah.
Like, it makes just no sense in the context of the movie. It's like, what? Now his body, I don't know.
None.
And so, you know, snowmobile and chase ensues. Like, some kicking rock music comes on. And the,
Jesus Christ.
It's like just a handful of shots of them, you know, of, I guess, dead Tom or zombie Tom or whatever Tom is at this point. Chasing her and almost grabbing her, you know, it's like a like road rage but on snowmobiles.
It's a elongated scene to,
yes,
you know, including there's a scene where they like skitter across this like small pond.
Oh yeah, dude, that's like badass.
Oh fuck.
Yeah, dude, I mean, I know there's going to be snowmobiling in the movie, but like honestly, it just goes on for like a little too long.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, at one point they almost like, that's right. So like, they finally get to like close to the other humans or something, and there's like a dude out there in like a
giant snowplow.
Yeah, just snowplow.
It's like a some kind of snow cat. Like,
yeah,
a,
it's just like something that he's like traversing the terrain in.
Totally.
And you know, Genie Cat hits the curb and like turns out of the way and keeps zooming by, but Tom like flies off his, or like tumbles off, you know, off his snowmobile and just right underneath this random guy in this snow cat, and he just like crushes.
It was awesome.
Tom and the snowmobile, and
the shot of it crushing Tom was fucking awesome.
Yes, it was great actually. But further, and I was not expecting this,
no,
but totally stoked about it, dude. I burst out and I was like, "Yes,
oh yeah, oh yeah."
The vehicle crushed, you know, like just crushed the snowmobile, gets over the top, and right as it finally is like off of it, just kaboom, dude! The snowmobile blows the fuck up, just. For no rhyme or reason, just blows the fuck up. And it was so great.
It was glorious.
On top of that, you get great stuntman work where Tom's body just out of the flames stands up for like a moment, and you know, like one of my favorites, full on dude in a suit on fire.
Totally.
Like, you know, and it doesn't get very far, just ends up collapsing, you know, and back into the snow and smoldering. Right?
The snowmobile explosion was,
dude,
oh man, I was so ecstatic when that happened.
Yeah, I was just, it immediately just made this movie like so much cooler.
Totally.
But you know,
but then perfect timing.
God, dude, right?
We don't, you know, perfect timing, out of the blue, a policeman on a snowmobile just happens to cruise up, you know, a second after this. I was just like, really?
Yeah,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, cruises on up, and Genie just fucking bolts.
Yeah.
Like, she ain't sticking around to answer no questions, man. And that's this is like the weirdest way to end the movie, if you ask me, man. Like, because it like, you have almost like this like, the, you know, as Genie the narrator starts kind of like describing the fallout and like how she's been, you know, almost like on the run and looking over her shoulders for 30 years, you know, not wanting to talk about it and not wanting to bring it up. You have these like shots of the police officer, and there's like a close up of his face with his aviators just like staring off into the distance for a while. and you know, and it ends with all this narration just slowly zooming out from where the officer is in the snow. And it just, you know, it just goes to credits after that. I was like, it ends with a shot of the policeman who just, he's been there for like all of
10 seconds.
Yeah, dude, it's like, it's crazy. I was like, it's Such a strange way to end it.
Totally. I have a brief summary of like everything she said with the voiceover. So, she talks about how she ran to get away. The sheriff was right behind with a shitload of questions that she couldn't deal with then or now. Yeah. Her friends' family still don't know what happened to their kids. Her nerve was gone, and that was it. She ran and kept running until she woke up back where it all started, and there was nothing to see but the ruins of a lodge that must have been burnt down 20 years before. My mind flipped between nightmare and reality is losing out. We should have stopped when Karen pulled out the board, but part of me wanted to know where the real world ended and the dark world began. I had to see the face of evil for myself, and now 30 years later, I still dream of that night with Tom and how it wasn't really a nightmare. No, the nightmares are really something else. And then, like you said, the credits start... and then the credits start to roll. This really cheesy, like upbeat, like country type song. Oh my god! The music selection in this movie is just baffling at times. Like the sultry music at the scene, the sex scene, like the rock song, and then this like weird. Oh man!
It was just so all over the place, and
totally
I don't know, like this movie was just like, it was like, I feel like it, you know, you read the premise and you're like, this has got to be a ridiculous movie, and like it's ridiculous at times, but it's also just like a pretty bad movie, like
totally,
you know, like there's a couple of cool effects moments, couple of cool kills, but just like a lot of like, it feels like a lot of like loose end kind of ideas that they were like, this works in other movies that
are
other horror movies. Let's just jam it all into here and like make it work with.
There definitely were some baffling weird creative decisions, like with the whole. Tom looking like he just stumbled up from the accident, you know, the weird scenes of like ghostly Lisa and ghostly Karen when he's ramming Jeannie. I will say this though, the movie does fly by pretty quick. So I did enjoy that, where it wasn't like it was like a slog to get through or slowed down at any pace. It keeps like a pretty quick pace. Like you said, there are couple good kills, but overall it was just kind of meh.
I agree. It just kind of felt very, I don't know, bland, benign, I guess, I don't know. But you're right, like I did appreciate that there wasn't a lot of like, you know, even with like shots of the people like walking through the house and stuff, it wasn't like super drawn out kind of thing, so it did help the movie feel like it was just moving fast.
It did definitely feel like, you know, because when this came out in 93, horror wasn't in the best place. And I feel like that's kind of encapsulated here. Like it definitely has an 80s vibe, definitely has a lot of, you know, tropes and a lot of things that would have felt right at place in an 80s horror movie. I don't know, man. It's kind of hard to explain further than that. Like people just need to watch it and kind of create their own conclusion. But I felt like it had a lot more potential. And it was kind of a swing and a miss at times.
I agree. I think it had more potential. But you know, I mean, it is what it is, I suppose. I guess sounded like a really cool premise that I think they just could have followed up on certain elements a little bit better.
It definitely wasn't. It was definitely no Snow Beast, so it has that going for it.
Yeah, it ain't no Snow Beast, and it ain't no Sledgehammer. You know, it ain't no. You know, although there were those slow shots that kind of give us, you know, kind of reminded us of it, but
right,
Yeah. By no means like the worst movie we've watched.
Right.
If I had to give it a rating, I would probably give it, I don't know, like it's pretty mid. I would give it like 4.75.
Okay.
Out of 10. Barb getting clotheslined off of a snowmobile by barbed wire.
Yeah, like, I was. That's pretty fair.
What about you?
I was thinking around the same. You know, five. Mm. Well, being generous, I'll give it a five. 5 out of 10. Football players don't get lost. They know where the end zone is out of 10. That line gave it gave it an extra point for me. fuck.
Oh my God, dude. That's so, yeah. That line is just epic, but probably the best thing out of this movie.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know how we started watching the Ocho Cinco VH1 love show. I was like, that would be a perfect line for Ocho Cinco to drop
for
at some point.
For real. Wow. Yeah, no shit. Jesus.
God, Christ. Dude.
Ugh. Speaking of TV shows, I hadn't watched any of it yet, but I binge watched the entire first season of Fargo.
Oh yeah,
it was fan fucking tastic, and I can't wait to watch the rest because like every season is like a, you know, its own contained story. Yeah. So I'm super stoked to continue that. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, dude, I've seen the first season. I can't remember if I watched the second or if I like got a couple episodes in, but it is like it's one of those like anthology type shows, like with each season. That's not the right term, but it's like it's just such a well done show, and they always have like such good casts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like it's awesome.
I also, you know, the first season too. There's, you know, the briefcase. You know, so there's like references to the movie, and I just wish that I wouldn't have waited so long, to get on that bandwagon.
Hell yeah,
but. It's also positive because I still have, I think the fifth season just started, so I still have multiple seasons to watch, you know?
Yeah, dude, by the time you're caught up, the fifth season will be like well underway, you know, and so you can like get back up to current. Like, I love that when you find a show like that and you're just like, yes, there's multiple seasons.
Totally.
I can start now. Hell yeah.
Totally.
Well, shit. Another horror movie in the banks. You know, what do we learn from this moment? This one, don't trust Dominican church camps that are out in the middle of the woods, I guess. Or whatever. Jeez, I still don't understand where the Dominican thing came from, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's such a conclusion to jump to.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, the unnecessary aspect of, like, the overtly racist bar patron. Like, that was that.
Yeah.
He could have just been a dick, you know?
Could have just been a dick. Like, yeah.
But whatever. Yeah, Chill Factor on Tubi. If you're using Tubi, go there and watch it and make up your own dang mind because you heard ours on it. Yeah, just a random one. And, you know, as we're like really getting into winter, I think it's a good movie to start out with. The first the first snow. So snow related horror movie. I guess we did Snow Beast, but that one I feel like shouldn't count for shit.
Yeah, that, like I said, that movie would justify as cruel and unusual punishment. So
yeah, make your worst enemy sit down and watch Snow Beast, but have a good time watching Chill Factor, you know, spin that devil's eye and see what comes out, I guess. I don't know. We'll leave episode 106 here. We'll have 107 for you coming up. Any final horror thoughts?
We talked about it before we recorded, but you know, go see Thanksgiving. Just watch horror, you know, there's so much horror out there to watch. So there's no excuse for you not to be watching horror.
Exactly. Horror isn't just one time a year, folks. It's all year.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. We'll see you on the next one.
Yes, we will.